Once you start listening to Tamarack's song, it will become quite clear why he's an internationally known consultant for wilderness trekkers and trackers and for organizations such as the National Geographic Society. We've previously spoken with him about his book, Entering the Mind of the Tracker, which I ended up gifting to a high school debate team student. The knowledge of the non-linearity of relationship serves us in all aspects of our lives. And now, with Nature Speak, Tamarack's latest book, he continues on that path of deep relationship, building understanding to be a most stable structure of comfort while living in the world. Part 2 with Tamarack. I'm Robin, and this is Tributaries. Probably a quick way out of nature speak is to talk about having a pet and winding up, as most people do, always telling the pet what to do.
Oh, boy.
What do you recommend starting a child off with when they have a pet? And P.S., I love that you wrote in your book that you don't have to be one of the last wild Aborigines to speak with animals.
Right. Well, so much can be done with learning nature speak and helping to re-become what it is to be human with a pet if we just drop the concept of pet. Pet means that I own this animal, that I have control over this animal, and this animal at least sometimes needs to do what I want this animal to do. So what I'm doing is creating an extension of myself rather than embracing another being as brother or sister. So this is what gets in the way. It's this superiority and the thought that I know what another living being should be doing and how to do it. The more freedom we can give our quote-unquote pets, the more they are going to be their natural selves, and the more they are going to be immersed in nature speak. We can teach pets hand signs. We can teach them to respond to our verbal cues, our commands and such. However, we're just creating another human out of them. We're trying to create another civilized human out of them. If we can just let them be and listen to them and realize that they are far superior to us in some ways, just as we are with them and just as you and I are with each other, Robin, and just listen, just be with them, we're going to be able to start listening to what they have to teach us, and what they have for us is tremendous.
Yes, and for me, it was an easy movement from that to children. And what can you share with parents regarding the domestication of children that takes them away from nature speak, which I think is innately how we all are born into communication, and yet forms of domestication take us out of that?
Wow, this is a big topic. We have created a tremendous mess out of child rearing, first of all, because we consider it to be child rearing. Again, we are treating our children the same way we treat our pets. We think we know how they ought to be, and we think we have what they need. So they need to listen to us. They need to learn from us. And it doesn't matter whether we are liberal parents or strict parents, conservative parents, or we're practicing unparenting. Whatever our approach, we are still functioning as parents, and we are interacting with them as children. And here's the issue. In Native cultures, it's tremendous to watch. I've spent time with Native clans, and the children have a culture that is completely separate and distinct from the adult culture. It's amazing as to what happens. The older children are caring for the younger children, and the younger children are looking up to the older children, for example. And the whole children's culture is a microcosm of the adult culture. They are playing house, and they are The young boys are off hunting. They have their toy bows, and they're making traps and snares. And the older children are taking care of the babies, and all of this is going on. It's not that the adults are completely isolated from this, but they are separate from it. They are watching over it. You know, they're the benevolent overseers, you might say, to make sure that nothing goes wrong. But they are pretty much taking care of themselves and learning from each other. It's just beautiful. There's not a peer structure there. What we do is we throw all the 4-year-olds together in nursery school, and the 5-year-olds in kindergarten, and the 6-year-olds in first grade. Well, what does one 6-year-old have to share with another 6-year-old that's going to be beneficial? Not much. You know, we have to have a teacher there. Well, when a 3-year-old is together with a 6-year-old and a 14-year-old, they have a whole lot to share amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. Both ways, the older children are learning responsibility and how to guide younger people, and the younger children are learning by example and by experience. And they're learning in a transitional way, because a 3-year-old can see a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old and a 14-year-old in this children's culture and see the whole progression of evolution. Hey, this is how I'm going to grow. He's not there with just a bunch of 3-year-olds in nursery school. Yeah. We're all at the same level. And this is what we are missing, I think, with the way we, quote-unquote, raise our children.
Flipping off into quite a different direction, I loved reading about Gabor Horvath's study of the artistic renderings of an animal's gait. And the findings are kind of amazing. And why was that study done? And do you think he was surprised by the findings?
Well, usually when a researcher sets out to with a scientific experiment, he or she or the team has something in mind that they want to prove or reveal. So I don't think he was surprised at all. I think he was going for what he had intuited already. And
could you share what that was in this?
Yeah. Yeah, that people who do not have a close relationship with animals don't understand how animals walk, which foot they put in front of the other, basically, with four-legged animals, what the moving sequence is. And people, the closer people have a relationship to animals, the closer they come into, the closer they understand how animal gaits work. So that's essentially it. Taxidermists, for instance, who work with animals, not with live animals, but they're setting up animals for display purposes, stuffed animals, they are slightly better than the average person on the street in terms of getting animal gaits correct. And we'll go right on down the line. People who work with horses, for example, who have horses, are a little better than taxidermists, and on, to native people who are actually out there living with animals and tracking animals. They know the gates. They have it down. So this is a beautiful, for me, this goes beyond this. It's a beautiful metaphor for the assumptions we make in terms of thinking that we know and understand what's going on around us, whether it's in nature or in the office or in our families. We make these assumptions as to how things work and how things function. And we are oftentimes wrong, and we are basing our decisions and sometimes our relationships upon these assumptions rather than being in deep relationship with these people or with nature so that we can see how things actually function. It's getting back to the discussion we had a little while ago about prey-predator relationships. We think it's the law of the jungle. You know, the bigger
right.
animals eat the smaller animals, and it's just a mess out there. Well, that's not the way it is when we immerse ourselves, when we envision.
to go even further away from a linear type of study or knowledge, you studied birds' silent language and learned so much about their biology. Can you share an example of that?
Sure. The language of birds, again, we are rationally oriented, and we want to understand birds, first of all, by identifying them, you know, birders and many of us lay people, me too, I have my bird field guides. We like to identify the bird, to identify the species so that we have a name for the bird and we can find out further information. Is this bird a migrant? Does this bird live here? How is this bird related? How is this warbler related to the other warblers in my area? All of that sort of thing we can get from our literature. And we listen to bird song. We oftentimes learn to identify birds by their songs because we sometimes can't see them because they're up high in the trees or they're in the brush. And this is all well and good. This is like reading my lapel label if I'm at a conference and I have a lapel label with my name on it. Oh yeah, you're Tamarack Song. Hi, Tamarack. I wanted to meet you. Well, okay, I have the bird's name, but I don't know the bird. I just have the identification. And what the birds have to show us goes so far beyond the surface knowledge that we can gain by listening to their songs or opening a field guide, and that actually detracts us from what the birds have to share with us, what we can learn through nature speak, which is nonverbal largely. The way a bird sits on a branch, it's not just the fact that a bird is sitting there, but what is the bird's posture? Where is it, a low branch or a high branch? Which direction is the bird facing? Is the bird resting and relaxing there? Is the bird's tail held up, or is it relaxed? Is the bird jumping from branch to branch, or is the bird just in resting state? And there's so much to the bird's posture and formation and positioning and location that is speaking volumes more than the bird's song itself. By looking at a bird on a branch, I can tell whether this bird is feeling threatened or not by other male birds in the area. I can tell whether this bird is mated, whether this bird has eggs, or this bird is feeding young. I can tell whether the bird is just passing through or whether the bird actually belongs here, if the bird has a territory, a chosen territory here. I can tell whether the bird is an adult or a juvenile. I can tell the bird's emotional state. All of this by nature speak, by what the bird is speaking that goes beyond just his song. And here's where the song becomes a distraction. What I encourage people to do, actually, when they're out in nature, is to wear earplugs so that they don't hear the bird's song, so that their other senses come more to life, and so that their intuitive ability is heightened. And in this way, start from the complete opposite perspective than what they would typically do if they brought their field guide with them and were listening for the songs.
This brings us right into another question, which I read about in your book, and I love that you talk about how the animal mind understands that we cannot trust what we see. And what is the significance of that to you?
Trust is another concept like equality. You know, we want to trust the people around us because of our culture of scarcity again. There's too much anxiety in life if we are competitive with the people closest to us. We need to be cooperative with them. We need to be relaxed with them. However, there is no such thing as trust in nature. I wouldn't call it mistrust either. I would call it awareness. There is a constant state of awareness that creatures are in the natural realm. And this is not just for self-preservation reasons. Of course, if I'm a small animal and there are predators around, I better be aware. I better be mistrusting of any large predator coming around because I might get eaten. But it's so much more than that. It's about fulfillment in life. It's about living rather than merely existing. If I'm a passive receptor, such as we are trained to be oftentimes in school, we sit and listen to the teacher, we open a book and we read the words in the book, we sit in front of our video screens, our computer screens, and we're constantly being fed things, we're passive receptors, and we have to filter this out. What is good for me? What's not good for me? We do this for our children. This is not appropriate material for you. We cannot trust what's around us. And in nature, and we try to create a trusting environment. Oh, I trust that my children are going to be safe in this playground, and I trust that my children are going to be reading good material at the library at school because there's no pornography there, that sort of thing. We have to have that trust. In nature, we cannot trust anything. It's not because we would mistrust, it's because we want to be immersed in relationship. We want to be living rather than existing. We want to be fully conscious, fully aware, fully sensitized. And this is what brings the richness to life. We're not doing it just because, oh, I'm a squirrel here and I'm afraid that hawk is going to catch me. I'm doing it because I want to be in relationship with the other squirrels. I want to know how the nut trees are doing so that I can come back and feast later and store my nuts for the winter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's essentially living as a question. What the native elders told me was be as a question, be as a question. Don't look for answers, don't look for safety, don't look for security, but constantly open doors, constantly be as a question. There are no answers. When I think I have an answer, it just leads me to something else. Open it up again. Open up the answer. There's another question behind it. Just keep going.
What's your most mind-blowing experience you've had deeply ensconced in nature speak?
Whoa. Let's see. What can I choose?
I knew you'd have a few to choose from.
Yeah. Actually, I had one yesterday. I went to a wake yesterday. This was a home burial. Part of that wake was all of us going out into the woods, finding a quiet place, a secluded place, and stripping ourselves naked, taking off our clothes, and laying down on the earth and asking the Earth Mother if she's ready to receive us. And the reason for this is because we were there to be with this person, this friend of ours who had passed over. However, we are all passing over too. We are all in transition from one form of life to another, and we never know when it is going to happen, and in part because it's happening continually. So I laid down under a tree. It was a tall, tall maple, a stately maple. And I looked up, and the trunk of the tree just carried me up to the uppermost branches and into the sky and the clouds. And I just lost connection with myself. I disappeared. And I became the sky, and I became the branches. And it's as though my molecules were just spread across the universe, and I ceased to exist. I was just part of everything around me, and it was beautiful. There was no thought or feeling about it. I just was. I just was everything around me. It's this sense of oneness or nothingness or universality or whatever term I can grab to approximate what nature speak was all about, because it was nature speak in its fullest sense. I was nature and nature was me. I ceased to exist. When this happens, and it happens regularly, whenever I get immersed in something in nature, I disappear. So I cannot choose any one most profound experience, I guess, but it's when this happens, it's always profound for me. It's always ecstatic.
Yes, understood. Before the nature speak, before that type of experience happens, I believe I read in your book about the two-track brain and how the animal brain differs from that and is able to handle so much more input. Is there something you can say about the two-track brain and maybe the transition or...
We have three brains. I'll just go over this real quickly. There's the reptilian brain, which is our oldest brain, which takes care of our basic functions, food, reproduction, our fight-flight mechanism. That's what it does, and that's essentially what we need in order to survive. our mammalian brain evolved in addition to that. And that is our limbic process. This is where nature speak occurs. And this is the brain where our emotional consciousness is seated and our long-term memories. This is where 95 to 99% of our mental functioning occurs. And from there, we humans and the other great apes as well evolved frontal lobes for additional processing, additional rational processing. And our frontal lobes, our rational slash intellectual mind, is essentially a two-track mind. Data comes in and data is processed, and we make decisions based upon the processed data. And we consider this to be the center of our mental functioning. However, all we are really doing is acknowledging or recognizing what is going on in a deeper sense. We think we are making decisions. We think we are making choices and noticing things, but it's not happening on a thinking level. We are just acknowledging it in our rational processes. All of this is actually occurring, and much more than we are consciously aware of, in our deeper minds, in our limbic process, our mammalian mind. And this is what we can't define it. We can't get a grasp of it. So we call it intuition. We call it a sixth sense. We call it a nurturing instinct or whatever. All of the various labels we apply to it, we call it the voice of the Holy Spirit if we are traditional Christians, or the voice of our guardian angel or whatever. But really, it's this deeper voice that I call nature speak.
Where do you think the frontal brain capability is taking us that would be a positive direction?
I think our frontal lobes are a beautiful gift, and all we have to do is reorder our priorities and have our frontal lobes serve our limbic process rather than control. Here we have to relax. We have to relax culturally. We have to return to a culture of abundance. The mother is going to provide for us. Everything is here for us. We do not have to compete for it. We do not have to rape the earth for it. We do not have to overpopulate for it. We don't have to create bombs and fight wars for it. We do not have to do that. All we have to do is relax and listen. It sounds simple, but it's not easy, of course, or we'd have already done it. It's not easy at all.
In a recent interview, the guest was speaking about forgiving our own procrastination. And you write that procrastination is being animal mind dominant. And I think that's good news for all.
Yeah. Yeah, we're supposed to be industrious. We're supposed to be involved. We're supposed to be productive. We're supposed to be engaged. And that does not work in nature, and it does not work with us, because we are constantly fighting ourselves. We're blaming and shaming ourselves for not doing what we should have done, or putting off until tomorrow what we should have been doing today, and not meeting other people's expectations, and on and on and on. Well, what is considered to be procrastination is actually listening. It's being aware. It's being awake. It's being fully attuned to what's going on around us. When we are focused, you know, keep your mind to the task, right? Do this, follow through on that. We are shutting out everything else that is going on around us. We are not functioning in nature speak. Here's our two-track mind again. It's keeping the nose to the grindstone. It doesn't have to be just work. We play that way too. Keep focused. Here are the rules of the game. It doesn't matter what we are doing. We are so conditioned to be focused. We shut everything else out around us, and we shut everything down within us except what feeds our focus. And when we quote-unquote procrastinate or daydream, we are actually opening up to our inner voices and the voices around us. Now we are living rather than merely existing.
What's the one tip that comes to mind for thinking without words right now?
Listen. When we listen, we start opening up. I mean deep listening. I don't mean focused listening at all. Procrastination listening. Dreaming listening. Getting right back to that. This is all we have to do. Everything is here already. There's nothing we need to learn. There's nothing we need to practice. We just need to peel off the layers of conditioning that have us presupposing that we are supposed to function and interact in this particular way. Just forget all that, all of our beliefs, all of our preconceptions, all of our conditioning. I'm not saying to throw it in the trash, but just set it aside to see what it feels like to just be. Walk out into your backyard, a city street, doesn't matter what, into the wilderness without any preconceptions. Leave everything behind. Leave your cell phone behind. Leave your watch behind and just immerse and listen. And you'll be amazed, not only as to what's around you, but as to what you are capable of absorbing, capable of reflecting and becoming a part of, being in relationship with. You'll discover that you're already in relationship with so much if you just listen.
Yes, being in relationship allows us to, and I'm coming at something that I read in your book, how I wanted to finish this interview, is not focusing on other fits in with what would seem one of the very first rules of nature speak, because to be in relationship definitely releases that focus on other.
Yes, relationship does not exist outside of the interactiveness. I am nothing unto myself. You are nothing unto yourself. This tree outside my window is nothing unto itself. This tree exists only in relation to everything around it. And I only exist in relation to you and everything around me. This is what defines life. All of us are the same life. And if we can just relax around that, and we're not going to lose ourselves. It's okay. I run a year-long wilderness immersion course, and one of the first things we do is to ask people to strip off all of their jewelry, even leave their names behind. Anything that they use to self-identify is going to get in the way of relationship, of finding out who they truly are in relation to all of the life around them. And it works beautifully. It's a very fearful thing for people to do. The necklace that their mother gave them, the name that they identify themselves with, these are very, very personal accoutrements for the ego. When we can leave those behind, we leave the metaphor behind, too. That's what's most important. It's no longer I and you or self and other. It's me in relationship. Here I am. I have no name. This is I am just whatever I am in relation to you. And then things start to come alive.
Yes, perfectly said. Tamarack, I appreciate so much you sharing, and all of these questions today came out from reading your book, Becoming Nature. So I thank you very much, and it's just such a pleasure.
Well, likewise, I very much enjoy talking about my life, and because it's talking about your life and the life of your listeners, too, it's all the same. And I very much appreciate this opportunity to share with you, Robin, and I hope we have another opportunity.
Yes, well, I will look forward to it. Tamarack Song, author of Becoming Nature. Wonderful clarity from this man. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasting on iTunes is under Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.